George, what have we learned about this and these laws and these how these laws work?
Well, first, let me say this. You know, Greg's a good buddy, and Greg, more than probably any other person in my life, blew up my phone with texts and helpful phone calls saying, dude, rethink where you're going with this just because I have X, Y, and Z concerns and all these other things. And it's a good question, Pete, because what we have seen now after this period of time where I think there was maybe 20-plus states in the light of all of these mass shootings that tend to be developing across the country, at least the perception that there are an increased number of shootings by the mentally ill, and I have that perception too. About 20-plus states went down this road in various versions. And you know what we started to see in other parts of the country that went further than we did and actually passed it, like Florida, is Greg's fears, and I think the fears of many Second Amendment supporters, and I consider myself one as well, and legitimate gun owners, was like, look, this is what we're talking about. You look at Broward County, Florida, and I think that's probably the first best example. In 6 months, I think it's the sheriff's department, it could be all law enforcement agencies, have eclipsed, almost eclipsed, I think, the number of times that these particular extreme risk protection orders have been issued in 12 years in Indiana with similar legislation. And that to me is an eye-opening, I think, realization that this thing is, I think it's ripe for abuse in the wrong hands. Now, remember, though, when we're in this position to have this conversation before, in the aftermath of Zach Parrish, which was not the first officer shooting that we've had with someone who was dangerously mentally ill, I've got two of the world-class sheriffs in the country, you know, that work for me. Work with me, Dave Walcher and Tony Spurlock. And so it's easier, I think, for people to say, these are two guys that would never abuse this. And I do believe that. But I also believe that in light of what we're seeing around the country with some of these other bills being floated, oh, my goodness, who comes after Tony and Dave? Yeah. Or who comes after the person that comes after Tony and Dave? And once you have cracked open the door to the potential abuse that exists in a law like this, it's Katie bar the door, and we cannot have that on this issue. Can't have it.
As I hope the next Attorney General, how do we stand in all of this?
Well, in terms of the policy piece, which I'd love to be part of that conversation, one thing I think that we're in a position to do a lot better now that we weren't back in late April, early May, just before the session dropped, was to not be shoehorned into a one-size-fits-all approach, especially one that challenges the Second Amendment in a way that just, I think, is too risky for me personally, but also, I think, for the community. Instead, we have to focus, and I agree with Greg on this part, it is the mental health piece. And as someone who has been swimming around in the criminal justice system from about every angle for almost the last quarter century, the two greatest areas in need of some investment of resources and attention in a way that we haven't done it thus far is addiction and mental health. And if we could lick those two things and figure out a way to do those two things, we have a very different criminal justice system that we're dealing with. The part where Greg and I disagree is that I don't think that our existing laws can be made to work. And here's why I say that. We do have a 72-hour mental health hold, but it's fake. And when I say that, you know, having talked to as many law enforcement officers in my jurisdiction as I have, the idea, and practically speaking, how we find someone to be an imminent risk to themselves or others, I mean, it's almost as if unless you pull them over on their way to something with all the guns loaded, locked, and ready to go, and then murmuring something about wanting to use them, you can't achieve a level high enough to put them in a place where you can get them the help that they need. And I agree with Greg. It is not about the guns. It should never be about the guns. What it really should be about is how do I identify those people who we can bring help to keep them safe, not just for themselves, but for their family members, and put them back on track to be autonomous if they can be in the community. But we don't have that law, practically speaking. On paper, yes, but it doesn't work that way. We need to adjust, in my mind, how we think about imminence and how we define imminence in a way that when Tony Spurlock's guys take a guy into the emergency room because we have no other mental health resources available for them, that when an ER doc goes and talks to this person and evaluates them, they can't say, well, look, yeah, I do think that they're in need of some mental health. I do think that there is an issue here, but I don't find that it is imminent under the statutory definition of imminent. That doesn't help us, and it hasn't helped us now for many years.
Yeah, it's
can't be about the guns. No, got to be about the mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, truly –